Welcome to MGO Podcast 9.28, where several governors are interviewed. Probably. At least candidates. I don't know. I don't follow politics. Welcome to MGO Podcast, deepest, darkest part of summer. We are again coming to you because we are talking to a gubernatorial candidate. Welcome, please. No, just kidding.
Steve's really moving on up.
We would like to thank our sponsors, Underground Printing, The Bow Store, The Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Homeshare Lending, Peak Wealth Management, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Ecotelligent Homes, and Human Element. We will talk to Steve Lorenz later, but I don't think he's running for governor yet.
No, we need a few more commits first.
It would be really interesting because like, all of his legislation would be jabroni and darts based. Which is,
you know, it's a platform.
It's a platform. But Michigan, we're here because Michigan has had a recruiting Lollapalooza.
Yeah.
I probably could have done better than recruiting Lollapalooza.
Committapalooza is a term I've used. Yeah. It was in a headline, too.
I know.
We're working on it.
That's why
it's been a long week.
Has it?
We had all these commits, you know.
Well, I mean, the 4th of July was
in. And then
there.
The 4th of July got thrown in. And, yeah. You know.
Stayed inside because it was hot.
Yeah, watched some World Cup.
That's when you work at home, like the World Cup is bad because it's just like, where did this day go?
Yeah. Yeah, all of a sudden it is mid-afternoon,
but
late afternoon.
Now that is in the past. Committapalooza.
Yes.
We're about to talk to Steve Lorenz about the class as a whole and
where
prospects
moving.
For moving up because... there are a number of guys in the class who we were like, hey, this guy seems underrated. Are we just being homers? And it turns out that probably not, because the guys at 24/7 also agree with us.
Yes.
In large part.
And some of these guys are also just very clearly under-scouted.
Every hello post, every recruiting profile has this complaint in it about the state of the recruiting industry. So let's just put it out there.
Yes.
Scout is no more. It has merged with 24/7, which is good for 24/7 and their rankings, but bad because like 24/7 had an opinion on a guy, and then Scout had an opinion on a guy.
And those were the two main good opinions for the most part, and the reliable ones.
I thought that
of late.
ESPN's opinions were...
When they got around to somebody, we're good.
Yeah, like I thought
they were just more limited.
Having them in the area gave you more useful information on a number of prospects.
Scout also had the very handy free evals on the recruit pages.
Those have largely moved. That's something that is now on 24/7 pages.
They have shipped those over.
So you don't get like, okay, the difference of opinion on these guys is being weighted equally. Now it's wrapped into the 24/7 ranking, which is probably better. But in terms of the composite, it has less force.
Yes.
And ESPN has checked out, folks.
They are just not really doing it.
For the cost of 5% of a Stephen A. Smith, they have gotten rid of their evaluators. And there's...
Yeah, I mean, I think they have like two or three guys covering the entire country.
Yeah, so maybe if Michigan gets a top 50 guy, you'll get a real Strata report, but probably not, even in that case. And then Rivals is still Rivals. They have some guys that they look at, but usually those are the guys who go to their specific Rivals branded camps these days. And they have some pretty off-the-wall rankings. Like,
we will mention Eric Gray later, and it's an off-the-wall ranking.
But last year, you know, you have the two in-state offensive linemen who get ranked below various MAC guys. And, like, I'm willing to listen that maybe this guy is just completely out of loop. But when you're going up against Michigan and Notre Dame offers, in Ryan Hayes' case, Michigan State offers, and you rank him like number 20 because he's an offensive lineman who has to put on weight,
Like, which is, we're learning, is actually probably a good thing.
Yeah, that's actually.
You don't want to be cutting down from big. You'd rather be working your way up from tight end size.
So they have some holes, and it's really hard to find much scouting that they do on a national level.
Like, yeah, I mean, the other thing is nobody, if they are scouting games in person, nobody's actually writing them up anymore. Like camps, yes, they will write up some camps, although you get as much previewing of the camps as you do actual scouting from them sometimes, depending on the prospect. But I mean, you know, like,
I don't even
to cite one
articles.
Yeah, no, I mean, what's the point? It's just telling you who's going to be there, maybe, because some of these guys bail. I mean, we'll talk about Zach Charbonnet later, who looks like he's clearly one of the best running backs in the country, plays at Oak Christian in California. Like, that's a guy who should have had eyes on him for multiple in-game evaluations, and there are none of those out there. It's all camp stuff or stuff based off of his film.
You know, when you say Oaks Christian, every time in my head I hear Oaks Clawson.
Yeah, I mean, that is his school. That is Clawson High.
Oh, man, Jimmy Clawson was just, man.
Well, the commitment announcement was really something.
He looked like an ostrich.
He did.
Which is fine if you're into that sort of thing.
An ostrich wearing high school championship rings.
Yeah. Committing to Charlie Weiss.
Decisions.
Decisions, anyway,
decisions.
This has been a blast from the past.
There's yes, we do have things to talk about that are a blast from the future.
So,
where do we begin?
There were many commits. Let's, most of these guys, we've already taped the Lorenz segment, so we've covered all of it, but we did not get to the 2020 guys, all of whom I think are pretty intriguing prospects. I wrote up Khalil Branham.
Yes, the man of many track medals.
He's got enough track medals to almost have a shirt, and also has a jugs machine he has at home, and he's constantly posting videos of him using the jugs machine, which is sort of like a... You create the expectation on Twitter that you will be using the jugs machine, so you go use the jugs machine, which is a good plan.
Yeah.
But he's not the biggest guy. He's like 6'1", so he's either a big slot or kind of a slightly undersized outside receiver. Currently kind of a 3.5-star guy, but if he does have that track speed and can translate that into a bunch of stuff in his junior year, he could move up a bit.
Yeah, I mean... As an outside receiver, sure, he might be a little undersized, but...
Well, he's not 6 foot... But he's like, not like the archetype that...
Yeah, he's not Nico Collins, you know.
Right.
He's not one of these
giant
red zone-y types.
Tariq Black.
Yeah.
He's more of a Manningham, if that actually works out. We'll see.
But, I mean, the speed is very promising. The hand... I mean, it's nice when you got a jugs machine in your backyard.
Yeah.
I imagine that can't hurt the hands. And he really,
except literally,
yeah, he gets off the line really well. I was impressed with the way that he sets up routes, for a younger player. He was able to get more separation than some pure track guys aren't really great in and out of breaks because they're just used to running very fast in a straight line. And that did not seem to be problematic with
him. I think it's clear that their dad has been pointing them towards D1. He's an older brother who's currently projected to go to Pitt, who's a running back.
Yes.
But, like, this is a family that has been coaching these guys for a long time, so I think he'll probably come onto campus pretty ready to go.
Yeah.
But still a long way out with him, obviously.
Yeah, but, I mean, certainly an impressive athletics package. He will come...
And shout out...
Well decorated in track and field.
But shout out to Khalil Branham's late grandfather, who was a big Michigan fan living in Columbus, Ohio.
Yes.
A brave, brave man.
Yeah, yeah.
So, this is an Ohio commit that we expect will stick, unlike a couple real early ones in the 2018 class.
Yeah, no, this is somebody who managed to grow up blue and... A red state.
Yep. So. God. All of a sudden. You did the other two. Denver Warren, who I will definitely call the Colorado defensive tackle several times.
Even though he is from the hometown of Wayne and Garth. He is from Aurora, Illinois. Party on, Denver Warren.
Party on, Denver Warren. Defensive tackle, which is something that Michigan hasn't been loading up on very much in the recent classes, he's also a big defensive tackle.
Yeah, he is 6'2", 318 right now. He is sturdy. It does look like one of those 318s that's going to, you know, need a little bit of weight redistribution, which is not surprising for a rising junior defensive tackle who already weighs north of 300 pounds. But he's got a lot of really positive camp evaluations. 247's Gus Ramos called him a man-child at an Under Armour camp.
Man-child.
His strength is a very clear positive for him. I'm trying not to say strength.
Man-child is such a bizarre compliment. Because it's like, okay, this guy is a really big and strong guy, so we're going to call him a man.
Child.
We're also going to call him a child. It's what?
It is a little,
I guess it's a child that's already a man. That's what
yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
All right. I figured it out, everybody.
Yeah, they flipped it back around. Yeah. We're good.
We should cut this out of the podcast.
We're just going to keep going.
But we're just going to go.
But the other thing with Warren is that, you know, a lot of it is what you'd expect for, you know, 320-pound, like, physically dominant rising junior defensive tackle. But also things that they talk about with him are his quick first step. And his technique with his hands gets mentioned in multiple reports, and you do not that see that weird. Very often with a defensive lineman that age. So, including another 247 evaluator said his technique and handwork are better than some college freshmen, and then compared him to Calvin Avery.
So I don't know who that is.
Very recent, highly ranked prospect. It's too recent to have college stuff on the guy, so...
Okay, so you really shouldn't know this guy's name unless you're an LSU
unless you're a recruit, Nick. I assume it's somewhere in the South.
That's just my Calvin Avery drum roll.
Illinois!
What?
Yeah, no, I forgot because I wrote this in the post. He was the crown jewel of Lovie Smith's class last year. He is a top 250 defensive tackle. Out of Texas? Yeah.
What? Did he kill a man? He's fleeing the law?
I was trying to avoid.
No offense to anybody in the Avery family. Avery. But like, that's a very Texas thing to do. It's not even frowned upon in Texas. If you know, the law is on your back because you shot a man in Texas, Reno, and. it's cool.
Yeah.
It's the Wild West.
So anyway, you know, Texas doesn't have
conventional zoning.
And we've lost everyone now before we even get to Steve's portion of the podcast.
Oh, man. Anyway, we were talking about
Denver Warren. Who is his offer sheet is like pretty much everyone in the Midwest except for Ohio State right now. Not a ton of big schools yet, but, you know, it's super early.
Yeah.
And camp reports are pretty good. I liked his highlights. He looks very advanced for a rising junior defensive tackle.
All right, and then Andre Seldon, a 2020 cornerback out of Belleville.
We could pull up this hello post from any year, pretty much, so from the last several.
He's the guy who wants
to be... He's a Jermaine Crowell defensive back.
Who wants to be Jordan Lewis 4, Lavert Hill 3, and Amber Thomas 2.
Yeah. Or Terry Richardson 5, or Delonte Hollowell 6, but, you know, maybe we can avoid those. But Seldon, no, his height is going to potentially be a limiting factor on his rankings.
He's a little bit not in the Jordan Lewis size category right now. He is more in the really early Detroit quarterback who gets highly rated and then washes out.
Yeah, he's listed at like 5'9", 160.
But he's got some time to grow still. Next year he'll be...
He needs to grow. And also with some of these guys, like Lewis... I don't think was ever as tall as his listed height necessarily, but he had long arms.
Well, also
that's also a thing with Ambry Thomas.
There's like, I'm listed at 5'11", and that's not true, and I'm listed at 5'9", and that's not true, and those are different worlds.
Those are very different worlds, because one of those you end up being like Will Likely.
Who is still a good player.
A very good player. But a little limited to maybe a guy that you'd be worried about if you start getting targeted on like slot fades.
Sure.
But Seldon, I mean... You know, Crowell is talking about as athletically like on par with anyone he's ever coached, which is all of the aforementioned Cavs.
I mean, he's definitely a hip pocket kind of guy.
Yeah, so. I mean, he and you can see it on film. He's really twitchy. So I mean, I don't think there's going to be any problem with that kid sticking with people. It's going to be a matter of developing the skills to contest balls when they're thrown his way.
Gotta go with sure you can.
Yeah.
So that's it for the 2020 guys, and we just covered everybody in the Committapalooza in the Loren segment. So that's coming up next. Enjoy.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're gonna win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present The Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was just it was a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops a loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships. And we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
We'd like to welcome in Steve Lorenz for a long overdue episode of Inside the Crooked Blue Line. How are you doing, Steve?
Good. How you guys been?
Been good. I'm older than I was. Talk to you less.
Same here.
But so not a lot of recruiting things really happened for a long period of time. Like you get a commit here and there, but it wasn't like
a spree.
Like this signing day was the least interesting signing day ever for a lot of reasons. One of them is that there's now an early one. But anyway, Michigan has got their aforementioned recruit spree. And as we're doing these profiles, we're like, this guy kind of seems underrated. This guy kind of seems underrated.
Nobody's looked at this guy.
Are we being homers?
Yeah.
And so you came out with an article on 24/7 yesterday about, well, a couple days ago now, about whether these guys actually will or could move up. And it was kind of in the same vein where you're like, this guy should probably move up. This guy should probably move up. Maybe not this guy, but a lot of this class seems like it could be upwardly mobile. So we just want to kind of go down guy by guy and get your yes, no, maybe take on moves up. For the record, nobody ever moves down because that's rude.
Extremely. Right.
So
it does kind of work out that way though. Weirdly. Yeah, it does. I wonder if that's why, but, you know, actually real quick before we, there was a reader on the board that had asked me if I thought anybody was going to move down, and I was kind of like, no, I don't think so. Like, you know, like exactly what you say is it's very rare for a guy. If they do, it's usually a highly ranked guy that maybe gets passed more so than like making it downward unless they really struggled.
Well, unless you get like the Ricardo Miller early max out type thing.
You do see some guys drop back. There is kind of a recruiting gravity where a guy who is ranked, who's rated the same, will lose spots because other guys are found.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you see a new recruiting ranking and your best guy has dropped 10 spots, it's probably just because other guys have emerged.
Yeah. Odds are his grade has not changed.
Yeah.
Not at all. Then I always try to tell people, like, look less at, like, maybe the numbered ranking. Like, if they're a top 100 guy, they're ranked, like, 64th or whatever. If the rating, you know, if we have them graded at 97 and they move to 72, let's say, and they're still a 97, that's really what it, you know. I mean, I know there is a numbered ranking, but when you're, you know, once you get past, like, the top, I'd say 15, you know, like, 20 to 100 is there's so much wiggle room in there, and so many guys are so close at that level. So, you know, that's the way I've always approached it anyway. Rating over ranking, more than anything.
And for example, Nolan Rumler, Michigan's first commit in this class, was 74th, maybe, when he committed.
He was well inside the top 100,
And now he's 124th. Not because anybody's opinion has changed about Nolan Rumler, because they've had all these camps, they've had all this stuff, and people emerge.
Yeah. So also guards have a bit of a ceiling more than tackles, and he's an interior lineman type.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it's like he didn't have like the five, so he wasn't going to get bumped up to five star, and he's a very solid four star. And
100%. Yep.
All right, so let's start from the top with Cade McNamara, who's had a couple of good performances at the Elite 11, which now is like a three-stage process, is that correct?
Yeah, I think there's the regional, then there's the actual, like, the Dilfer thing, and then there's the opening, you know, where they kind of do the final. So it's
so at least there's, like, a few more throws in there.
Yeah. No, I mean, you do get to see, I mean, so our guys have seen Cade and the other guys, like, for, what, three separate, you know, with the Elite 11's a full weekend of just those guys. So the book is pretty much out on those 12 quarterbacks, and then the ones who maybe didn't make the cut after the Elite 11.
So does the traction he's gotten at the Elite 11 signal a boost, or is this just kind of like, this is what we expect a mid-four star to be like?
I suspect he's probably going to stay close to where he's at right now.
It seemed like a very weak class of Elite 11 quarterbacks.
Weaker. Yeah. It's one of the weaker quarterback classes, like, that I can remember.
I don't think there's a single five-star, right?
No. I don't believe the composite or on our 24, either the composite or the 24/7 rankings. I don't know if Rivals or ESPN has a guy at five stars. I don't believe they do. But it is one of the most down years that I can remember. JT Daniels reclassifying to 18 didn't really help that. If he was still around in 19 like he was, he would be the five-star. He'd kind of be the headliner. But he was also older than most 2018 prospects. I was really weird. I don't know how he was a 2019 guy to begin with, actually. But yeah, it's been a down year there. I think for Cade, yeah, I suspect we had him sixth. I know that's where Barton and Luke Stampini had him ranked after the opening, 6th out of 12. You know, he's sitting, I think we have him at 90 right now. I suspect that's probably where he's going to stick. Maybe Spencer Rattler, the Oklahoma commit, might be the one guy that will make a really the leap up to a five-star. But I think Kate's probably going to stick around where he's been.
All right, and running back, Michigan's two recent commits, Zach Charbonnet and Eric Gray, both have some arrows pointing up. And this one's not much of a mystery because Charbonnet, your Barton Simmons has said that he is going to move up quite a bit.
I mean, you guys,
we watched
how
the
long
film.
Did it take you guys? Yeah, I mean, he's a guy. You know, it's one of those things when Michigan had offered him probably a couple months before we actually found out, because this kid literally talks to nobody. I suspect that he has a ton more offers than what's even on his profile right now. And you can see why, like 15 seconds into his film, you know, he was the number one guy for them. And again, you can see why, just like a Fournette light, just that the got the power and speed, a guy that can take the contact on and then it still accelerate away from that after kind of slowing down.
Fournette light is not an evaluation that, I mean, I get where you're going, but Fournette is the opposite of light. So it's just like,
that's funny. You know, I mean, like
the guy who could dance.
Poor man's Fournette. I don't know. Yeah, no, Fournette is the opposite. You know, he had some of the best, but just that size speed combo, kind of what really, you know, I feel like what Michigan's really just been looking for under Harbaugh is this. And, you know, he should move significantly up. I know, was it Brian? A guy like this was so lightly scouted. I think that guys who don't talk to the media as much, I don't necessarily think that it's like that they are negatively viewed then because they don't, but I just think they sometimes these so many of these kids, they get lost in the show a bit. But a kid who plays at a school of his size, put up the stats, and then you just turn on the film. He's a top 100 guy, in my opinion. I'll be surprised if that's where Barton doesn't move him. Just those are simple facts. I mean, it's that easy, really. Yeah, there's no need to overthink it, in my opinion. And, you know, we'll see if his senior season raises the bar even further, because we aren't going to see him at any of the camp type things. He doesn't do that stuff, which I'm sure you guys can kind of tell seems to kind of randomly be a theme with a lot of Michigan commitments. They don't really, always a heavy group of them that doesn't really put in that stuff. He's one, but yeah, I mean, top 100 guy. I know both Barton and Greg Biggins, who has covered him, has seen him live, believes he's a top 5 back in the country, which, based on our rankings right now, would put him somewhere in the top 75 for sure.
All right, so that's a move up from somewhere like 215th or something in that area.
He was down close to 300 when I was looking at him.
Yeah.
So Eric Gray is an interesting case because he gets an Alabama offer, and we always put big quote marks around Alabama offers. But the difference here is that he got one out of camp.
Also, he's won two straight Mr. Footballs in Tennessee as a sophomore and a junior, and has run for like a bajillion yards.
And he rushed for 3,000 yards last year.
And like 45 touchdowns.
Which...
it's comical.
It's honestly, there's a point at which a high school running back has too many yards.
Yeah, I think that might be he might have done too much. Eric Gray might have done too much for us to like believe in his ability.
So Ty Isaac's high school film was similar in that like it's just like, oh, he scores another touchdown.
Although Isaac's was like worse competition and just a lot of running through gaping. Like there was less stuff after breaking through the initial hole than what Eric Gray does on film.
I think Gray is a good prospect, but I got that vibe from his film where it's just like
He does get to the second level untouched a fair amount.
Yeah. But
so I agree. I think his performance at the opening was, I mean, at running back, like running back's one of those positions where, in my opinion, you can only do so much at an event like the opening. you know, it's not an event for linebackers either, as far as, like, you know, a lot of these guys, I feel like they stress too much how they play in coverage at linebacker with, like, a DeCosmo or a Heron. Like, those guys are not going to be great covering, like, a Giles Jackson or a, you know, a kid like that in these events. So our running back is always interesting. He was one of the best ones there. I think he's going to, I mean, we already have him in the top 100. And Barton, he's another one, as explicitly said, is going to move up based on his performance at the opening. So how far is that? I don't really know. He's one. I think the composite ranking.
I was about to say.
Stinks. Yeah, it's
Rivals has a nonsensical ranking out there right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm
he's
not,
the number, you know, 21 not, player in Tennessee. And right. We're gonna have Lorenz listen to the thing that we think is silly, because let's be professionals. Well, he'll be a professional.
Yes,
but, like, you know, having that kid as the number 21 kid in Tennessee is like having Ryan Hayes the number 21 kid in the state of Michigan last year.
Yeah, and almost worse, because Gray is so much more high profile in terms of what he's done there too.
I mean, true.
Again, back to back Mr. Footballs for a back to back state championship team.
Goes to the opening. That kind of stuff. So yeah, it's there's a kind of burgeoning MGO blog thought that we should just be ignoring the composite and just using 24/7 rankings.
Yep.
And well, that's all Steve has to say about that.
With Scout dissolving, I mean, if I can see an ESPN
checking, you know, out, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so I don't know if that's where we're heading or not. I'm interested myself, you know, cause I'm not involved in that. So, like, I don't ever really mind commenting on it too much, just, you know, cause I'm not involved. But yeah, I mean, Gray's another guy, or yeah, both Mayfield and Hayes last year, guys that, you know, I feel like pretty clear that they're kind of better than what their composite was. I've always liked to see, because, you know, that's the thing about last year's class too. You know, it was so lowly ranked, but really there were a ton of guys that we had ranked a lot higher than what the composite did. And of course, the team rankings are generated by the composite, you know, and the ranking for them last year would have been a little bit higher if they had gone strictly off 24/7's rankings. So, but yeah, with Gray, it's like, you know, he's a top 150 guy, you know, but right now he's probably 250 only because there's the one grade out there that's like killing his composite score. And again, we already have him in the top 100. So if they're willing to move him up even further, I mean, that's usually a good indicator, you know, an explicit mention of a move up means a guy, in my opinion, based on history, the way Barton grades, means that there's a good chance he moves pretty far up. So, otherwise it would be less discreet, you know, not really worth mentioning if they were just going to bump him up like 5 or 10 spots, but.
Okay. But I have a problem, and that's like, they can't bump him up too much. Cause if they bump him up into like the top 50, that's no good. Because a top 50 running back at Michigan is not going to work.
I was waiting for that. Charbonnet's going to break that.
Charbonnet can be 51.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'll drop him a note to put him at 51. If no matter where he was going to put him.
No, calculate the composite ahead of time. Make sure it works out.
The composite won't be a problem.
Yeah, that's true. There's an anchor there.
So 51 is the ceiling for both these guys. Thank you. at wide receiver, Michigan picks up George Johnson the third. Who's a slot, who's a dual threat quarterback, and is ranked around 1,000. And that probably isn't going to change, even though he got a Florida State offer of some validity right before his commitment.
See, I mean, because he plays quarterback, you know, it's like, I think I wrote it similar to Barrett last year, where I don't know, you know, how, like, especially with, Michigan wants him at receiver, Barrett more of a probably receiver first, but like slot, you know, like, Wildcat, I don't know. They might
be
they'll do the same stuff.
Yeah,
maybe they'll do the same stuff with Johnson. But, you know, I it's just hard to say. 85 is a pretty, like, a mediocre baseline as far as, like, it is a spot where a guy can always move up. And Florida State, definitely, it was in Georgia also. And I checked in after Johnson committed, and I believe Georgia would have moved forward with him, actually. As hard as that might be to believe with the guys that they're always in on up there now, you know, that he was a guy, but they were really intrigued with his abilities. So he's a senior film guy. We'll just see, like, how far they what kind of grade are they willing to give a guy, you know, who plays a dual threat quarterback as an athlete. You know, you guys might know, I don't know how much defense he played last year. I just know Michigan wants him on offense, and you know, that he projects receiver, of which there was scant film and stuff to look at as far as that goes. So again, a lot of that's just off of history, right? And that's why, like, Barrett was a guy that, you know, all I can do is just kind of recommend. And Barrett was a guy we were pounding the table for, like, dude, just watch the guy. It's like, you know, it was obvious, like, how good of a player he is, and it never changed. So, you know, we'll see if it changes here or not. Again, a South Florida guy, though, I mean, if he has a big year, he's going to maybe probably start to see some other offers, too. I mean, it's not like he has, I mean, come on, a commitment is maybe might bring more attention, you know, from other schools, you know, now that he's verbaled somewhere. So, you know, it could be a guy that, that continues to blow up, and, you know, if that happens, then the possibility is always there for a bump up, for sure.
At tight end, Eric Aull is already a five-star headline candidate. he's also a guy who played his last high school season at about 190, if that's correct, Ace?
I believe so. Yep. He was skinny.
And he's up to 220. He's still a big wide receiver, but will progress towards tight end. Kind of a 3.5-star, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, around that range.
And he obviously could blow up, but that really depends on his quarterback, I think. And I don't know what his quarterback situation
is. He's got like 20 minutes of senior film, and a lot of it's him like blocking from H-back. He's kind of interesting because he does have that big wide receiver look. But
and he has a Wisconsin offer, which is a weirdly really good tight end offer.
It's a great tight end offer. Yeah.
And Iowa.
Also a good one. You know, their tight ends were very good last year and this year.
Yeah. And again, he's the third, along with Gray and Charbonnet, that Barton's explicitly mentioned is going to see a bump.
Oh, well, there you go.
And, that's off of soft testing numbers, off of them seeing him in person recently at one of the opening regionals. And, you know, I don't know if the offer sheet has a ton to do with it, but it is. I mean, the Wisconsin tight end offer is, like, super noteworthy. I know there are programs that pay attention to certain programs. I know, like, it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility to suggest that if Iowa offers a running back that the Michigan staff probably thinks that that kid is much worth, very worth looking at or looking into, let's say, like,
and saving.
So, yeah. And so, you know, and so it's a great offer sheet. He's another guy. I feel like, again, whether or not he plays the recruiting game or if he sticks, is a guy I think was going to see more offers heading into his senior year. Either way, it always happens at tight end. It's one of the most late bloomer positions there is. I know in 17, like the cycle that Michigan didn't take any, they made a really late run at a kid named Dalton Keene out of Colorado. I think that was the train formation guy.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that was him. And he played extensively last year as a freshman for Virginia Tech and looks like he's going to be a stud, you know. And so it's one of those positions where guys, you know, you'll see guys take big leaps forward, or a undersized tackle, maybe shift to tight end, or a bigger wide receiver, you know, type thing. So, you know, but they, Barton loves them. The offer sheet, yeah, backs it up. And Michigan, really, they missed out on Luke Deal. You know, they kind of pursuing some other guys, but really all kind of felt like the guy that they liked the most after Deal. So, you know, always, really always is a good indicator that a kid's a potentially really good prospect. I mean, Michigan's track record at tight end is going to continue to be almost unparalleled in college football, in my opinion.
So there are five offensive line commits. Jack Stewart's in Connecticut, so he's not getting a bump up. that's just being real.
That Ace. Is. No, it is. I'm not arguing.
Who's the kid out of Cincinnati?
Zach Carpenter.
Zach Carpenter. I think you said in the article that he was already pretty heavily scouted and would stick where he is. Nolan Rumler is one of the best scouted guys in the class.
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned earlier he got in early and is kind of locked in.
Yeah, he's on the backwards treadmill, but he's obviously a solid 4-star.
He's still an excellent guard prospect. Yeah.
So the two more tackle-y type guys in the class, Trent A. Jones and... help me.
Carson Barnhart. Out of Pawpaw, Michigan.
Pawpaw. You ever had a Pawpaw? Yeah,
no.
It's the kind of fruit that you'd eat once and you'd be like, yeah, there's a reason this is in the supermarket. But anyway, maybe I didn't have a good one. I'm sorry, whoever gave me a Pawpaw. I hope you're not listening. Those guys, I think Barnhart has already seen a fairly significant jump.
Up to a 90 rate 4-star.
All right. So on 24/7, they've already done, I think, what they're going to do. I think he's probably static I-24s, and maybe some other people will catch up. But Trent A. Jones is an interesting guy because he's out of Georgia. He had a good offer list. He committed to Michigan early. He was one of those like Stanford or Michigan guys, if I recall correctly, which there are way too many of that Michigan doesn't get. But
although the tide's maybe turning there a little bit.
Maybe a little bit. We'll see. Just need David Shaw to stop being so charismatic.
No. So it was interesting when I did this article, and then I went back and reread it. One of the other things too. So he plays at Grayson, which has like 15 D1 guys. I mean, it might even be higher, really.
Yeah, that was the school that Kurt Taylor transferred to, right?
Yes. Kurt Taylor. Owen Papo's the top, maybe the top prospect in the country. He's definitely one of the top 10. Wanya Morris, who interestingly enough, I think is going to be a 5-star, but was a guy that when Jones committed, I mean, there are at least two people in the Georgia area told me that they thought Jones was a better eventual offensive line prospect, which I thought was really interesting, because Morris had a great opening, it sounds like. And so to hear that about, you know, based off of film and not the camp type stuff, you know, was interesting. So, you know, he's one. It's like there's this thing where it's like, okay, so everyone's going to go to Grayson. Everyone's going to have every Grayson game on film, you know, because there's so many guys. And it's like, does that mean there's a better likelihood that he'll get a fair shake evaluation-wise, or is he going to get lost in the shuffle among the, you know, 15, 20 D1 prospects they have in their team, right? So he had a good offseason, it really sounds like. I didn't see him live, but I know at the few events that he was at, you know, he was one of our standouts, I believe, at the Under Armour. The one camp he went to where our guys were there, he was one of the standouts. And after having some good junior film at such a difficult, you know, at a program that plays like such high level competition, he's one of the guys I'm kind of interested most to see if he fluctuates or not. Again, if Clemson, he had a bunch of them really, Florida, you know, a couple more SECs, I think South Carolina in there somewhere. So, you know, he's one guy I'm really, really interested to see. With Barnhart, yeah, Allen's already got him at a 4-star, 90. And I don't know if there's more upward mobility on that or not. You know, I don't think Pawpaw plays, like, great competition every Friday.
Is that? So, I think that they're in the same league that Philip Payo was in.
Yeah, that's Springs about right. And, yeah.
It is right in that area.
Because I remember that when I wrote him up,
you were looking at the competition.
I was like, he plays Pawpaw. There are no D1 prospects on Pawpaw's team, and then here comes Carson Barnhart.
Yep. You never know.
Well, Pawpaw's a nice little town. Been through there a couple times. But it's, you know, Allen has him at the 90. And again, with the company, you know, he's gotten to see him at camps. He's been, for a kid from Pawpaw, he's been seen a few times now. And, yeah, I think it is more of will the composite catch up. That's really, I think, kind of the big question there. I could see him maybe us bumping him up a little bit if he kind of continues that upward trajectory, because I do know that what they saw of him this spring and summer was better than what they saw in his junior film. So there's a possibility that you know, could be the continuation of a trajectory there. But I think it's for with him specifically, I think it's more about, yeah, will the composite catch up and, you know, get him into that 4-star overall territory.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Passion for e-commerce.
Sell stuff online.
Security. Performance.
Conversion.
Beautiful user experiences.
Belle expérience utilisateur.
Monthly marketing. PPC SEO. Make your user a customer. Conversion. Audio Perfume for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Elements show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores.
Hey, Brian, I want you to know something. Icicles are pretty.
They're pretty wasteful. If you have icicles, chances are you have cold rooms. Here's what you need to do. You need to call Ecotelligent Homes for a comprehensive home energy audit. They will find the source of the issue. Their licensed teams will install the fixes. They will help you qualify for the right local rebates, and they even offer financing. Ecotelligent Homes is an award-winning DT Energy and Consumers Trade ally. Call 248-291-7815 or visit their website at ecotelligenthomes.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Albatross flying again after 20 years in a cage. Passes overseas, brings a ghost to its knees. Feathers flocking into words on a page. Now I've had faith.
On defense, Chris Hinton pretty much can't move up, so we'll just
right
move on from there. Stephen Heron is a guy who has moved down fairly significantly, because when he committed to Michigan, he was on the verge of five-star status, and now he's just outside the top 100. So it does happen often with early prospects like Heron, who people are very, very hyped out, and then they kind of like, maybe a little bit not so hyped, but still and obviously a very good prospect.
The good news is he might be sticking in the class.
Yes, that's the other thing is he's given various quotes about how he's not going to decommit anymore. So hopefully that's the case. But if he does schedule a visit somewhere else after all these quotes, it's over.
It's time to put in a flip pick.
But for now we're listening. We're hearing you.
Mm-hmm.
But he's probably not going to move up because of you don't move down and then move back up. That doesn't really happen.
That's rare. You're right. And yeah, when that is kind of the thing. That, to me, it's one of the I get why we release class rankings so early. I think it just gets some, it's proof that our eyes are out there, that they're seeing some things. But there are always, every cycle, there are guys that maybe start out in the top 100, top 50 even, who,
do you remember John Ditto? He was a wide receiver, tight end guy out of Pennsylvania who was top 25, and then he was a three-star by the end of the cycle. He went to Penn State.
There's a bunch of them. I just had one. Even a kid that Michigan's recruiting right now, Josh Sanguinetti out of university school and down in Florida. He was a top 30 prospect, I believe, when we first released the 2019 rankings. We now have him at 87. It's the way it happens sometimes. There are guys that maybe come in early on are a little more physically ready, and then once other guys start kind of catch up to him physically. It's more of a physical thing, obviously.
Yeah, Heron's also from a really big program. I mean, he's from Trinity in Louisville, so that's a big time.
Right.
Wells got a program.
James McKinney him, School.
Of all the polls.
Just, I don't know why I remember that, but I do.
So, what was interesting with him was, like I said, those linebacker, defensive end, hybrid guys like really struggle at these opening.
Yeah, I can't believe that they were putting him in coverage.
There are some comical one-on-one clips to come out of the opening because it's just like, what are you even doing out here? Like, how is this useful?
Every year, you know, and those guys, I think they become unfairly, it's like people will find these quote critiques in their game when it's like, no, this guy would never be in this scenario on a college football field, like ever.
Oh, yeah, if Eric Gray slides into the slot, Stephen Heron is not the one who's going to track him out there.
Exactly, you know, and that stuff
unless
happens.
Unless he went to Maryland.
True.
I watched a clip of Gabriel Floyd, who's committed to Texas, who's like 6'4". He's a huge like linebacker, covering Giles Jackson, who's 5'8", 165, and the kid just glides right by him, and it's like, I can't, I feel bad. It's like, really? Like, you know, and you're going to get the whole, like, oh, he got exposed type crap, and it's like, no, like, he would probably be hitting the quarterback and if he was really on the field right now, not covering this guy. So what I looked at with Heron, and yes, I don't see a guy, like, in his position moving back up, but he tested really well. I mean, he had one of the best spark scores at the competition, regardless of position, which I guarantee you that's all Michigan would care about, you know, because he's being recruited for his versatility. So defensively, you know, much like Aeneas DeCosmo, the same deal. And so with him, you know, I think it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, I don't see any more upward mobility there, but Michigan knows what they're getting, and he's not, you know, those events are never really going to help him necessarily as much as they could. It's a could help, but more likely to hurt, you know, type thing. So, but, you know, you got to like the want, you know, the desire to go out there and compete, though. I mean, because, yeah, you see some of those, well, you take like a Wanya Morris, like a maxed out high school offensive tackle, like 6'7", 320, you know, and it's like, it's just, yeah, it's dumb. So, I think if anything, he would stick around where he was, but I suspect he may like slightly move down a little bit.
All right. In similar testing, but different future prospects, you know, at least as far as rankings go, news, David Ojabo is one of Michigan's blitz commits, and he was almost kind of the subject of an interesting 24/7 article about draftees at weakside end. And kind of the moral of that story was get a 220-pound guy who's a ridiculous athlete, and David Ojabo is a 233-pound guy who's a ridiculous athlete.
Who runs a sub-11 100-meter dash.
So he's new to football, so there's always going to be some uncertainty there, but you kind of feel like this guy should be a consensus four-star in like the 100-200 range by the time the cycle's over, just because he's probably got more upside than all but a very few defensive ends in the class.
I 100% agree. He's a guy we've said that about, had that opinion on before it became clear that he was leaning Michigan to, you know, Ohio State, Penn State. He was a take at Ohio State, definitely a take at Penn State and Notre Dame and Texas. I mean, all five of his finalists. I mean,
Penn State should. They got to look at what he is with his teammate the year before.
It's true.
Absolutely. With OA. So, and OA, I mean, there are many, again, sort of like the Trent, the Jones, Wanya Morris thing, that many that think Ojabo should be ranked higher than OA, who was a top 100 guy by the end of the cycle last year. So
Ojabo certainly seems to think he's a better athlete. He's not a bad quote at all. I'm excited for that kid to get on campus.
I agree. I like, you know, he apparently, it was one of the best camp performances that Michigan's had since Harbaugh's back. I mean, he just blew everybody away. Not that he wasn't the guy they were already going to push for. He became like priority number one after his camp performance. So, yeah, I suspect, I don't know if he's a summer mover or if they just want to watch, like, maybe basically see how he comes out to begin the season. But yeah, I'd be really surprised if he's not a 4-star on our rankings sooner rather than later. I think that's a pretty safe bet, you know, especially with, you know, our projections are more like what you said, Brian, about the NFL article. I mean, that's the way Barton tries to write them up, is more of an NFL projection than how they're going to perform in college. And just on that alone, you know, that sub 11-100 is one of the most impressive. I mean, that's, you know, that you have to read that twice, you know, when you see that for a kid that size. So, yeah, all the traits, all the assets. He's not a guy that's going to, I don't think he's a year one guy. He doesn't need to be with how they've recruited up front, but a guy that, you know, has all the potential in the world. And those guys always end up graded high at the end of the process, almost always.
Yeah, I was looking at Owe's rankings progression throughout his recruitment. And if I was, Ojabo was a little bit behind him in terms of where he was graded at the same point in time, but Ojabo was also playing out of position at defensive tackle last year because Owe was playing defensive end. You know, so he was basically Mario Ojemudia, New Jersey version, but yeah, also with a terrifying DE next to him. His film's entertaining.
Hey, I'm staring here. That's terrible. I'm sorry. The last defensive end currently in the class is Gabe Newberg, who's out of Ohio. He's ranked around 1,000. He's probably not going to, like, he could move up if he has a good season soon, but he hasn't done the camp scene at all, if I'm correct. It's like a committed 3-star in that range usually has to like bite the head off a quarterback to get a get a re-rank, I think. So he's probably going to be static, I guess.
I think static maybe star-wise, but I could see his rating moving up. I know, like one guy who's been a great addition to 24/7 since the merger is Bill Green, who like legitimately works hard to scout, you know, as many kids as he possibly can. And I know
we love Bill Green at MGO Blog.
Right.
There's a commit from a 2020 kid, we're like, is he in Ohio? All right, there will be some scouting out there.
Right. Well, he's awesome at what he does. And that's why I see, you know, I think he'll be the voice in Ohio. So if he sees a kid and likes him enough live, you know, I think there's always the possibility that he could move up. And I know, you know, when Newberg committed, you know, the first thing he said is when he went to watch him last year, it turned into like there was like a thunderstorm, like a monsoon came through, and it was like a mud bowl type game, and said that, you know, it was a situation where it was really kind of hard to give him a good or an accurate grade because the just the playing conditions were so poor that, like, you know, nobody would have really looked good. So, you know, he was specifically mentioned as a kid that he's going to make a point to, you know, evaluate, you know, heavily this year, and compared him to Chase Winovich too. And so, you know, Chase was a 4-star. I mean, Chase was a 4-star the whole time. Granted, he looked completely different than he does now. You know, he was like a linebacker, quarterback type guy in high school, but just that motor and that type of thing. So, you know, he's a kid that we'll have to see. But I could see him moving up just because, you know, because Green really does a good job, and I think he's going to kind of have to say for the kids in Ohio.
At linebacker, Michigan has a couple of recent Viper-ish commits, one who could also play safety. Joey Velasquez was a baseball commit who I don't think a lot of people were evaluating seriously as a football prospect. The Michigan commit probably changes that. He will get a look, and who knows, right?
Probably the same as Newberg, really. DeSales probably had a few more people watching their games. They usually have a couple D1 guys every year. They had another one in Rodas Johnson, and I think Brian Asamoah last year was a pretty heavily scouted player, you know, and so I feel like he'll get a fair shake now. I mean, an 87 beginning grade is pretty solid, though. But for a kid who, yeah, probably really wasn't scouted that heavily.
And he is kind of a hybrid limited prospect in terms of how they're going to look at him.
100%. And so, yeah, 87 used to kind of be the running joke of that's what where Clint Brewster would always put a new Michigan commit without a grade, and then the Michigan State Board would just lose their minds because every Michigan commitment got an 87. So anytime there's a kid who's rated an 87, the the joke is always that Clint must have been the guy to grade him. So, but in 87 it is. It's a great starting point. And, you know, going back to Green, I know the one thing that he had mentioned is what he'd seen out of him is that he's a perfect fit for what Michigan wants to do. So if Michigan was grading him as far as, like, as Don Brown was grading him, he'd probably get a really high grade because he's going to fit that scheme to a T, you know, and whether or not he's a traditional type defense four-star, I don't know. So I think I said Jones and then Velasquez and then Charles Thomas, who we haven't talked about yet, are the three guys I'm most interested to see how they're graded this year. And yeah, with Joey, it'll be really, really interesting. But, I mean, he's been posting, he posts some videos and stuff lately, and you can, again, and just another guy, you can just kind of see it, just knows what he's doing. And, you know, I think he's a player that could be really exciting.
The other Viper type guy is also a potential safety. His name is Quint N. Johnson, which I guarantee I will screw up several
times.
You're
going to Tarantino it at some point.
I don't need to tell you how many times I've already done this. Where I'm just like, why can't I find... Oh, I did it again. But he has a top 10 spark score nationally. He's a 5'11", 205-pound guy. Eerily reminiscent of Kalik Hudson physically.
Don't mind hearing that.
Went to the opening. Actually, I think I got my wires crossed on Gray and Quinten Johnson because it was Quinten Johnson. Now I sound like I'm an alien trying to pronounce Umat names. But he is the guy who actually went to Alabama's camp and got an offer at camp.
Yes.
So usually we throw the question marks and quotation marks around Bama offers because those are invitations to camp.
I believe he also picked up one from Penn State when he camped there too.
But if you get an Alabama offer at camp, maybe it's a conditional offer, like, all right, you're fourth on our pecking list or whatever.
But they're interested.
But they're pretty interested. And then he gets an invite to the opening finals. Seems like a guy who could be upwardly mobile.
I agree. You know, especially spark score is something that's taken into account. It should be, you know, you're better athletically than your peers. There's a higher likelihood of success on the field when being coached by a, you know, world-class coaching staff. So, and another guy, kind of a late bloomer, and plays on a program where there are like 15 D1 guys at St. John's.
There's a lot of common threads through some of these recent commits.
Right. You know, and so, you know, it's a guy who, you know, Michigan had to have been aware of, you know, with Doyle and the other, there's plenty of young, I mean, their program's loaded in 2020, 2021. I mean, they're one of the most loaded programs in the country, the next two classes, you know, and so there's been plenty of eyes there. But yeah, I agree on the Hudson comparison. I think he's definitely a guy, but you know, Hudson stuck too. And he was just like, every year there's like one
which
guy.
Which was insane.
That was
insane. It is. No, he, like I said, just like with Barrett, Hudson was the one guy that we like really, really pushed to get
I mean, he did get a bump. He got into four-star territory, I think, on 24/7. And yes, no, not ESPN. But a couple of sites rated him as a four-star. Which prevented him from being the sleeper of the year. But like,
this is why you remember that.
This is why I remember
that. couldn't pick him.
So, but at the same time, you're watching this film and then you see him at the Semper Fi game and he absolutely pops off the screen and you're like, this guy's probably going to be pretty good. So that's why we were so over the moon about
that in the like 40 minutes of high school film.
If you can imagine, like, this is not trying to make any comparisons here or not, but a great source mentioned him as a Peppers type of player athletically.
Quinten Johnson
as a Peppers player, Peppers type. You know, there won't be, I don't know if we'd see another Jabril.
Those don't come along
across the board. You could cry across the board athletically, but a guy that is a very similar vein. And also kind of not that it's not a prerequisite at other programs, but at with Brown, it's always a must. It's plays very physically. And so he's a guy that, you know, they made this recent run. I think defensively, I mean, Ojabo, obviously, though, has that sky-high ceiling, but I think Johnson's a guy that they're just as excited about. A guy that kind of feel like they feel like they stole a little bit. Like, it kind of like, I think a guy they look back and say, I can't believe this guy didn't have 50 offers, type guy. I definitely see some upward mobility there, in my opinion. We'll see, how things shake out. They did get to see him live and in person at the opening, so I'm sure he'll see some fluctuation there. If there's no fluctuation after the opening, I mean, the chances of any are much lower, but there usually is with most of these guys. So,
And then finally, a linebacker, Charles Thomas, who you already mentioned, is at IMG, speaking of getting lost in the shuffle. He's another guy who kind of dropped. I think he was a low four-star when he committed, and now he's kind of in the three-and-a-half-star range on the three-star side of that. You mentioned that you were really interested to see what he does this year. Why is that?
So apparently, the coaches at IMG, like, absolutely love this kid. And they, not just because of, like, intangible stuff, it's just they love his game and his ability. How early he committed so early, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, when classes get filled up and stuff, and sometimes these guys that commit really, really early either get lost, looked over, or sometimes even moved on from, and that is far from the case here. Michigan absolutely loves Thomas. They love his game. I strongly suspect that Michigan would have him ranked as a four-star right now across the board. And really a guy that he's just a guy that I'm interested to see. You know, we talk about a guy who usually moves down, doesn't move back up, right? Yeah. But that same token, IMG plays such high competition week in and week out, you know, that if he comes out and has a big senior year, you know, you could see him move up. That's not a guarantee. My instinct kind of tells me he'll probably stick to be around the same where he's at right now. But I know that both the Michigan and IMG staffs, like, absolutely love him and love the way he plays. So,
and Thomas is now not the only Michigan committed IMG, too.
Correct.
Is that a second? DJ Turner transferred.
Oh, right. So yes. DJ Turner is one of the most interesting guys in the class in terms of a split between apparent offers and ranking. So he's got
right.
a lot of heavy hitting offers, and he's got kind of a meh three-star ranking. Which one of those is it likely to be the ranking at the end?
So if he had stayed at North Gwinnett, I suspect he would have stuck at an 88. But again, you go to IMG, and now he's got a chance to play. He also had a great spark score, too, at the opening. I think he was one of the top 15 or so scorers there. And I have compared his recruitment to Jamon Green from last year. I think it's almost identical as far as they were one of the first cornerbacks that Michigan offered. Michigan recruited them heavily the entire process, and then they took his commitment. Maybe the only difference is, yeah, Turner had a lot of other offers. Green was a little more, not recruited as heavily, I guess would be the best way to finally get that.
I mean, he did get Texas, and by the time he committed.
Eventually, yeah.
Right. But Turner had what? Bama, Georgia? Yeah. Florida. I mean, he had the whole...
I was surprised to see his star ranking just because of, I was tracking his recruitment based on what schools were in on him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's the thing, is that's what I thought about Green is, you know, Michigan believes right away he was one of the top cornerbacks in that class. And, they felt the same way about Turner. You know, like I said, we had him listed as a top target for forever. You know, it wasn't Michigan's going to get this guy. Now we have to, you know, make it appear as if they really want it.
Yeah.
But that, I mean, you know what I mean? So, but with Turner, I mean, it was the case the entire time, much like it was with Green. So, he's, again, another guy I think we'll see something after the opening. I assume we'll see some movement there. He's another one. I'd probably have him fourth as far as guys I'm interested in. I'm not always interested in the guys that we are almost assuredly know are going to move up as much as maybe some guys who maybe are a little bit more established, but there's still a whole other season of high school football to go. I'd be honest in saying, like, I think sometimes there's it hits a wall as far as the grades go. When it's like, by the time the senior season comes around, it's like there's this idea that these guys are, that's what they are.
Yeah.
And, yeah. I mean, we saw it last year with like Cam McGrown, where took a while for the rankings to catch up to like what was very obviously jumping off the tape from junior to senior year for that guy.
And that's what we're, you know, there were some guys last year, in the last cycle in 18, I think, that you could fairly say are project guys, like guys that are going to take a while, and that really there might be some uncertainty. But there were definitely at least three or four, you know, I think Green, I think Turner, Christian Turner, maybe Schoonmaker at tight end.
Yeah. We like the East Coast tight ends.
I mean, he's a quarterback from Connecticut. That's never going to be a four-star.
And, you know, and guys like that, and Barrett, like we talked about him.
Barrett, yeah.
Guys that were, like, their rating pretty much, like, stuck. I mean, Christian Turner was graded an 87 halfway through his junior year, and it never moved. You know, and it's kind of difficult to believe that he just was the same player that entire time. You know,
Sean McCune, I mean, too. Like,
right.
What is? Yeah. He actually played tight end, so he like.
And he put up a very impressive spark score.
He did. He put up a ridiculous spark score, and you're like, well, what's the holdup here?
Yeah,
living in Massachusetts, obviously.
I agree. You know, and that was my criticism last year. Was that, you know, whether it's because of, you know, if a kid commits, that they're less liable to, you know, I think that there's been a more concerted effort this cycle to kind of remedy that. But again, you know, we'll just have to see. And I think guys like Turner and Thomas are interesting, like maybe litmus tests in that regard. You know, okay, so we talked about guys like Heron, like the guys who are up there already, you know, aren't going to move up probably. But there are, you know, I mean, Thomas is an 88 in the composite, Turner's an 88 from us. And so, you know, there is movement. There's possibility for movement there, absolutely. And so, but whether or not they get that look now that they're already committed and there's no dramatics, you know, will be interesting. That's kind of, you know, like I said, I don't have anything to do with the rankings. I do think Barton and those guys do a really good job. Obviously, I would stand behind our rankings way before anybody else's. But that doesn't mean the system's perfect, you know? So, yeah. And so that's why, like I said, a guy like Turner, IMG, he'll be taking on elite players every Friday or Saturday whenever they play, you know, and so I'll be interested to see what happens there. Would have stayed the same at Gwinnett, though, in my opinion, if he'd stayed there.
And that is currently everybody in the class.
We got one more, I believe, who's in the highly rated and likely to hold category, and that's Mazzy Smith out of Grand Rapids.
Oh, yeah, right. I mean, there's so many people who committed. I'm just going to...
There's been a lot.
Right. He sticks. Alan's seen him. I mean, that's right.
He like rolls out of bed and he's watching Mazzy Smith, right? So yeah,
that's crazy.
they're close geographically. I apologize, yeah. Alan.
Very close.
It is. Apologize to
it's
Mazzy.
A 10-minute drive. Mazzy.
Recruiting. It's always something.
It's always creepy. Yeah. Thank you for reminding me.
You're all welcome.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we said we wouldn't do the whole podcast with you, but we did. So
we sure did.
Great. That's fine.
Yeah. No, so this has been a very extended version of Inside the Crooked Blue Line with Steve Lorenz.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Ace Amender along with Brian Cook, and I would just like to wish Steve Lorenz the absolute best of luck in his political career.
Better than us! No!